Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis, he's Kyle, and guy, you know, we're here bright and early. We're perky, we're ready to pod, Kyle, and I think that's because the Bears just open up a whole can of whoop-ass, top to bottom.
On Bears. America's team, the Dallas Cowboys, because that's the Bears, folks. We're anti-American, and proudly.
That's right, in every goddamned way.
Death to the great Satan. This is our, we've been doing this pod now for, oh Lord, Travis, let's see, this is our third regular season doing the pod.
Correct, we're between 2 and 3 years here.
Current iteration of the pod, anyways. Right. Not Scottcast V1 back in the day. So this is our, we've only done what? This is our 13th victory pod in all that time. So it's
you don't got to say it like that.
They're rare, they're special, and few of them feel as good as this one. Because everything came together. It did. And, you know, we talk, it feels good when, you know, we have that pod last week. We talk about how, you know, we watched the Bears played Detroit, and it was a disaster, and everyone was dooming and glooming, and we certainly did our fair share of dooming about the defense, and I still think darker days are ahead for that group. But like, you could, if you knew what you were looking for, you could kind of feel it coming with this offense. Like, they were closer than people think. I mean, they almost put up 30. They were some self-inflicted injuries in terms of penalties away and a swift fumble from putting up 30 on the Lions last week.
Yep.
So you knew it was coming close. And then here they come out, and yes, everyone's gonna, it's the Cowboys, their defense is bad, Russell Wilson was just great again. Yes. All of that is true. But just like we said about facing the Buffalo Bills backups in the second preseason game, when you have a defense that is bad, what do you want your quarterback to do, Travis? Do you want him to have 146.2 passer rating? Do you want him to throw 4 touchdowns with 0 interceptions? Do you want him to take 0 sacks in a game for the first time since September 2023 when he was at USC? Is that what you want to see happen against a bad defense?
Yeah, preferably if the defense is terrible, you make them look terrible. And thank God we did.
I mean, we watched this offense last, not this offense, but we watched this quarterback, many of the members of this offense last year face bad defenses in Washington and in New England and elsewhere. We watched them face some bad defenses and still look really goddamn bad.
Yep.
While they did it, and not be able to get out of their own way and not have proper. So yeah, I mean, it was an extremely impressive offensive performance.
I mean, we're used to being on the Cowboys end of this beatdown. You know, we went into this game thinking it's going to be a shootout. We came out of it and it's just the Bears offense that showed up to the shootout, and the Cowboys came with pop guns. We're used to being, you know, having Shane Waldron lead the offense, and we're like, ah, never mind. Even though that defense was bad, we were worse.
Right. It's you are seeing in terms of Ben Johnson, the masterful ability to game plan for the defense you are facing. It was very funny.
Shocking.
The number one thing, you know, we heard the Cowboys like, yeah, we've got Matt Eberflus sitting in on the offensive meetings to really talk about Chicago's personnel. And, you know, we think he's got some insight into Caleb Williams, and God, what I wouldn't give for the minutes to those meetings. But you know who has familiarity with Matt Eberflus?
Who's that guy?
Ben fucking Johnson. Mm. And he's got familiarity, you know, the way that nerds in high school Eberflus, I should say, has familiarity with Ben Johnson the way nerds in high school have familiarity with the inside of a locker, because Ben Johnson has beat his ass pretty much every single time they have gone head to head, and he wasn't surprised by anything that Eberflus tried to throw, and he had Caleb prepared, and I don't want to downplay what Caleb did either from a preparation standpoint, because Olin Krutz, of all people, who, you know, not one to tend to praise quarterbacks, was like, Caleb was in control at the line of scrimmage all day long. And you can listen to it. You can listen to the audio of the game. You can hear Caleb many times. He gets him to the line with plenty of time to go. They didn't have any pre-snap penalties this week. And you can hear him yelling, kill, 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 on multiple different options. He killed plays. He got them in. He didn't get them into bad run looks. They managed to cobble together an effective run game somewhat for the first time all season. He was audibling into the protections were good. He was never, there were no unblocked rushers coming free on the first touchdown to Rome. The Cowboys sent a blitz. Caleb got it blocked up and had plenty of time to throw that touchdown to Rome, make it look easy. Caleb was never flustered. He was never even kind of pressed. The few times he did come under pressure, he escaped it easily. You see Caleb in control of this offense. And yes, it's a bad defense, and yes, you want to see it keep going forward. But they abused him. It's what you want a good offense to do against a bad defense.
Yeah, it was telling in the press conference after the game when, you know, obviously they asked a question about Caleb Williams right off the bat. And Ben Johnson, you know, he mentioned the passer rating was crazy, and then he went straight into, you know, what I like to see the most is he was up to the line early every single play. He was able to get through his checks. You know, he was able to, you know, work through his cadence on every single play the Bears ran. There was no hurrying. And, you know, that's something that Ben had stressed, you know, all throughout camp, all throughout preseason. We need these guys to get up to the line on time because they have to go through all of these steps. That's how this offense works. That's how I'm going to run this team. So obviously, you know, Ben sees that in this game and he's over the moon. But yeah, I mean, just like Olin Krutz said, it was very obvious. He was up to the line with like 15 seconds to go most of the time, ran through all of his checks. And then, yeah, like you said, he killed a bunch of plays. I know in the first half when he did that, it was switched to a pass play, which he must be very comfortable with. And then in the second half, he did it. And it seemed like the defense was like, okay, we know what play is coming. And they did an outside run to DeAndre Swift. And boy, the defense felt dumb. It just looked like 11 guys that were like, we've been tricked. It was a trickery. We've had the rug pulled out from under us. And that's just, it's one of those little, like, it's those things you expect to see from a veteran quarterback, right? And it's one of those things that I think Caleb has been kind of antagonized about in the media. Like, oh, is he quick enough to get these plays in? Is he good at reading a defense? Doesn't seem like he does it at all. Like, you know, he didn't use a cadence in the first year. And it just seems like he's pulling all these things out of his bag now. And we're only 3 games into the season. We thought it would take longer. I did, at least. You know, I was expecting, let's get halfway through the season before we start to judge this thing.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously there will be tougher yes. days. I mean, it's not going to be this easy every week. But yeah, I mean, what's insane to me, and it's such an under-discussed issue, like, there was one question about this marriage between Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson. There was one. That's it. It's just one. It was, can Caleb take the coaching and do what Ben Johnson wants him to do? We're 3 weeks in, and I think that has been perfectly answered as yes, he can. Like, is it perfect every time? No. Is he still a tick late every now and then? Yes, but like, Caleb is, he's operating at the line of scrimmage. He's running the checks. He's running the kills. He's not running them into bad looks. He's not taking bad sacks. That's one thing I want to talk about already, is his pressure to sack rate so far this season is 15.8%. Last year it was almost 30%. He has cut his pressure to sack rate in half. He is 22nd in a good way right now, as in you want to be lower on this particular ranking in terms of the percentage of pressures created by the QB himself, where PFF attributes at least partial responsibility for the pressure on the QB himself. He's only 22nd in that right now. Only 11% of his pressures have been attributed to him. He's made massive strides in terms of his sack avoidance and in terms of not creating pressure. And that's despite still having the second highest time to throw in the NFL. And I talked about that, you know, I wrote the article, I feel like, though, on Caleb Williams and time to throw and how, you know, superficially it looks like Justin Fields, but here's why it's different. You don't want Caleb Williams to be a low time to throw guy. You don't want that. Like, if his time to throw is 2.4 seconds, something's gone wrong. Right now, Patrick Mahomes has the lowest time to throw of his career, and it's the Chiefs are a disaster because they don't have the opportunity. They don't have the players around him that when he does the Patrick Mahomes stuff and extend plays, he's going to make something happen. Every time he does it, things only get worse. So he's trying to get the ball out quickly, and it's still not working. So you want Caleb Williams to be a guy who can hold that ball and feel that pressure and manipulate that rush, but not take sacks and not generate that did not convert that into sacks, and that's what he's doing right now. He's finding the same balance that he had at USC. The touchdown throw to DJ Moore was a perfect example of that. You know, he steps up and through. He feels the rush. He steps up and through. He's sprinting towards the line of scrimmage, but keeping his eyes downfield. And when the Cowboys defense gets sucked towards him because he's running, he's able to just torque it right to DJ Moore with that ridiculous ability, crossbody ability that he has, and throw a touchdown pass. But yeah, I mean, we're seeing Caleb play with good footwork under center. We're seeing him do all of this stuff. And like, the question's already been answered. Like, yeah, he can do what Ben Johnson wants him to do. And now all that's left is he needs to settle in. He needs to get comfortable. He needs to, you know, he still had a couple misses because every now and then he plays it a little fast still. But like, that's all stuff that you can easily see getting better with time, should get better with time. But like, it feels like it should be a bigger story that like, yeah, he's operating just fine within this offense. And if he can do that, then there's really no reason to believe that this marriage between Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams isn't going to be spectacular.
Yeah, without question. I mean, you alluded to it a little bit there. All the problems are not gone. We don't expect them to all be gone right now, but they are getting better each week, right? That first week, we saw a lot of that short game inaccuracy. Were there a couple off-target passes in this game? Absolutely. But they were less than that first week, less than last week.
Well, and not to damn him with faint praise, but every pass he's missed so far this year has been to an open guy, which... Yeah. He's seeing everything just fine. He's not been fooled badly yet this year, even against Brian Flores. Even the interception he threw in Detroit, he was not fooled. He just made a bad throw. He's seeing everything. He's processing everything. And that's the issues on the accuracy. Like I said, that's, again, I think I joked about it, but I sort of feel it's true. Like, he had a miss early in the game and almost overthrew the touchdown to Kmet, because I feel like he sees guys come open, and after last year, after how hard that was, he gets so excited. He's like, oh fuck, it's there, and he just like whips it, and then there's just a little too much on it, and so he needs to get his feet worked on. But that's, I would so much rather be in a situation where I feel good about what is happening between the eyes or between the ears with this kid, or from the neck up, to quote Greg Rosenthal about a different second year quarterback that we'll get to later. From the neck up, I feel so good about Caleb right now and what he's doing in this offense. And again, when he's not taking, I call this the Jordan Love basically, but when he's not taking sacks, when he's not putting himself behind the sticks, and he's making a couple mutant throws a game. And I think right now he's top five in PFF in terms of big time throw and big time throw rate. He's making a couple of mutant throws a game. Then that makes up for the misses, because if it's first and 10 and you whiff, and it's second and 10 and you whiff, and then third and 10 you hit it, no harm, no foul, you know? And that's the Jordan Love thing. Don't take a dumb, stupid sack, and you know what? You're going to miss a couple, but then hit it on third and 10 for 20 yards, and all is forgiven. And that's kind of where Caleb is at right now. But I still expect that to settle in and get better as we go along. But there's nothing, you're not looking at him at any way, not to, you know, we need to move beyond just comparing everybody to past Bears quarterbacks, and hopefully with time that becomes less the barometer. But like, you're not with Justin Fields. It was always mental. It was always God, is he seeing it? With Mitch Trubisky, it was like, God, I don't know that he's ever seen a football game. And Caleb, just, he's seeing everything. He's seeing everything fine. Does he rush some throws? Is he a tick late on some others? Yes, but all of that should get better with experience and time. There's no reason not to be excited about where the trajectory of this offense should go.
Yeah. Okay, so which mutant throw of Caleb's was your favorite in this game? We had a lot of great throws by Caleb to pick from.
It feels like a try-hard hipster thing not to say the fucking flea flicker, because I'm sorry, yeah. He threw it 62.3 yards, flat-footed, couldn't even step into it after catching the most hilarious flea flicker lob I've ever seen.
After his whole life flashed before his eyes with that.
You didn't know that as that ball was in the air for 4 seconds, Caleb was like, I am going to get so fucking rocked. And you know what? He wasn't fazed. I loved his answer, too, when he was asked, like, how did you manage to corral that in and get that throw off? And he was just like, a God-given ability, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm sure that pissed someone off because Caleb's supposed to be fake humble, but like, I actually think that is a humble answer from Caleb. He's like, I don't know, man, I could just do that. Like, that's just One of those things.
He but made I a very funny joke that nobody laughed at when he said, they were asking him how he was able to throw it that accurately. And he was like, yeah. Well, I was able to look downfield a couple times while it was in the air because the pitch was so bad. Like
the ball was literally in the air longer on Swift's pitch than on Caleb's throw. It was insane. But no, actually. So you said mutant throw. So I think for that, I actually have to say the naked bootleg where he doesn't have either foot on the ground. And I was already applauding him because, I mean, when Luke Getzey used to run a similar play, we used to nickname it the bootleg of doom around here. And we have seen Justin Fields could teach a grad school symposium on how to just take awful sacks on naked bootlegs and not get enough depth. We've seen those naked boots go so wrong for years here in Chicago. And so I was already appreciating that Caleb immediately recognized, like, oh, nope, and he was throwing it away, and I was like, good job, Caleb. First and 10, don't make a stupid play. And that was when I realized that Roma Dunze had caught it and, in fact, got 14 yards, and I was like, holy fuck, that boy can throw the piss out of the ball sometimes.
Didn't good just catch God. It. Like, that throw, it pinned it on him
and gave him room to get upfield for another 5 yards of yak. Like,
it was a better throw to the sideline than J.J. McCarthy has thrown in his entire life. And he was in the fucking air throwing it.
Fucking mutant throw. But I will say that neither of those was my actual favorite throw of the game.
Sure.
My favorite throw of the game, and it wasn't mutant because it was entirely in structure and it was entirely on time, but it's on that 2 minute drive before the end of the first half. It was that high low concept where he threw it to Burton, and honestly, on broadcast view, when he first throws it, you're like, oh God, Caleb just threw a pick there, because all you see is linebacker, safety.
Yeah.
And DJ, and you're like, oh God, DJ is completely covered. Terrible decision, Caleb. And you're like, no, wait, he's throwing it over those guys to Burton. And that to me, because if you watch the All-22, the end zone view from Caleb's perspective, he can't fucking see Luther Burton when he lets that ball go. He has no fuck. He just trusts Ben. He trusts Burton. He trusts the system. He knows what he's looking at from the defense. The minute he sees that linebacker crash down on DJ, he knows that Luther's going to be there, and he just lets it rip. That is not that's accuracy. It's arm talent to layer it over the linebacker and the safety the way he did. But it's trusting the system, and that is just not a throw that he would have ripped with any confidence last year. I don't think he throws it at all. So to see him make that play in Ben Johnson's offense, fan-fucking-tastic, Caleb.
Incredible throw. Also hilarious on that play, Cole Kmet just standing there wide open off to the right, just like, ooh, nobody's around me. And he's like, oh my God, where is he throwing it? And you can see his eyes like, why? And then, oh my God, he like, we gained 30 yards.
I know, that's the thing about a Ben Johnson offense, is you might even have two guys open on any given play. It's
the combination crazy of Ben Johnson and Matt Eberflus created a lot of plays in this game where three people were open at the same time, and that was a blast. I mean, we've lavished a lot of praise on Caleb. How about these wide receivers? I mean, that was literally the pass play before Cole got the touchdown where he was wide open again.
And again, yep.
People just forget about him. They just forget he's on the field.
The best plays of Cole Kmet's career are the plays where people forget that Cole Kmet, where defenses show Cole Kmet the same amount of respect that I do generally.
That's right. Exactly. Podcast. He's just sitting out there like, why does nobody cover me?
Sir, not appearing in this film. Great play. I mean, the design wise, can't say enough good things about Ben Johnson in general. I thought, and Ben admitted this, I thought in week one, Flores kind of got the better of Ben in that he knew Ben and Kayla both were expecting a real blitz heavy game plan, and he used that expectation against them in the first half, played a lot of zone, fucked with Ben, fucked with Caleb. And then as they adjusted to that, then in the second half, Flores was like, okay, now I'm going goblin mode with the blitzes. As now that you've adjusted to try to adjust to attack my zones. And so that was what happened week one. Week two, felt the game plan was great. Just felt like the offense, you know, that some penalties killed him, and then Detroit was just putting up score after score after score, and then the game script gets away from you, the game plan gets away from you. But this is the first game, you know, where Ben Johnson's been able to be in control the whole game. I mean, not to go all Bear football, because God knows the most important thing was seeing Caleb look fantastic as a quarterback in that game, but a 19-play drive where they fucking ran it down their throat with this personnel, with this running back, 11 straight runs, and to still impose your will on Dallas like that without a true feature back, without a true between the tackles guy, that was fucking metal. But yeah, the wide receivers, I mean, Burden got his opportunity. Definitely, I feel like hopefully DJ Moore, you know, he played hard. DJ Moore did, and he had that touchdown. He was excited after the game, so hopefully we're just going to see a world where Luther and DJ can coexist. But I felt like it was pretty noteworthy to DJ that, like, Luther Burden was the run running that route on that flea flicker that almost certainly would have been DJ normally.
Yeah, without question. Like, the snap count didn't change a whole bunch. I would say DJ and Luther had basically the same amount of snaps they had. Luther had a few less last week. That was more because that Lions game was just an abortion, you know, from top to bottom. Yeah. But this was, it was pretty equivalent to week one, the snap count for Luther. The difference was the situations that Luther was in there for. Luther was primary receiver on the plays where he was in there, and DJ did not get a primary receiver look until pretty deep into the third quarter. And it was after a lot of run blocking. It was after a lot of clear out plays. He was being asked to run at a dead cardio 40 yards down the field. Yeah. And he was doing it. He was doing it with pride. He was doing it hard. He was coming out of his breaks. Honestly,
he was doing it hard. He was coming. I mean, that's what you want.
Biggest thing I saw from DJ was the touchdown on the broken play to Rome. DJ's on the other side of the field, and it's definitely a play that could go to DJ. I know JT O'Sullivan said he thought maybe the initial route for Rome was a mirrored concept to what DJ was doing. So it was either you go to Rome or you go to DJ, sort of. And, you know, Rome runs off because his guy tried to bump him and didn't realize he was trying to bump a brick fucking wall. And Rome just ran for the touchdown. But DJ on the other side of the field turns around, sees he's not getting the ball, looks over at Rome and sees him streaking, about to catch the pass to score a touchdown. And he's throwing up the hands. He's jumping around. He's excited. He's having a great time. We did not see that the first 2 weeks. It was, if I'm not getting the ball, I'm kind of pouting. We saw last week Rome catch a touchdown while that game was still very close. And DJ just walk off the field before he had scored the touchdown. So big improvement. I also noticed DJ doing a lot of, I mean, to me, it looked like coaching to the younger guys. He would talk to Burden when they'd get up to the line. Hey, like, kind of like stand here, blah, blah, blah. They're having some little discussion out there. And it's just nice to see that from DJ, because that's not what I've been seeing from him. And I bet he does have a lot of knowledge to share with these guys. And I bet he should be a leader in that wide receiver room. You know, you'd like to see him with a C on his chest. So huge steps for DJ Moore. God, I would love to know what Ben Johnson said to DJ Moore this week.
Probably something cool. Did you see the post game speech from Ben? Like the way the locker room was hyped for it. That was really funny to think that the people were concerned that Ben Johnson was some Mark Trestman type who couldn't command a locker room. Those guys clearly are bought in and running through a wall for that guy. Yeah, obviously you got to keep showing results to keep that, but he's definitely got their attention right now. And then obviously Rome, the touchdown pass, really cool to see him just recognize, like, oh, Trayvon Diggs slipped, and convert his route and see Caleb recognize that mercifully before he'd begun his throwing motion this time.
Yeah.
And be able to just throw the mailbox to Rome. And, you know, speaking of throwing the mailbox to Rome, speaking of throwing the flea flicker to Luther Burden, Caleb Williams currently 7th on PFF in terms of deep ball completion percentage and deep passing grade. Got a deep passing grade over 90. He currently is 5th. There are 15 quarterbacks who've attempted at least 20 intermediate passes in that 10 to 19 range. Caleb is 5th in completion percentage there. So that's pretty good for a guy that I was told quite clearly can't throw deep, Travis. He can't throw past 10 yards.
This, you know, if you were coming into the season, what were your concerns? They were the sacks and they were deep ball completions, right? And you just check and check.
Yep.
Like, you can't keep moving the goalposts on Caleb.
Oh, they will. At but this they, point, they can. They great. Will. They are. Yeah, they can. They will. They are. The goalposts are moving every day.
With this happening, and with Penix and McCarthy and Jaden Daniels struggling or injured, you know, maybe the winds will change a little bit over the next few weeks. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, no, I mean, the wider Rome, only downside about Rome is our contested catch king is still, he's not making the contested catches.
DJ and Luther Burden get hit and they hold on to the ball. And for some reason, Rome Odunze gets poked and he drops it, which is too bad because his route running
it was a little bit of
wild, right?
Well, now. I mean, here's the thing. You would, if you had to choose, you would absolutely rather have a guy who's doing what Rome is doing right now and just absolutely cooking man coverage and showing off incredible route running ability and being impossible to break. Like on a down to down basis, he's being a true number one wide receiver. You'll take that every time, even if the contested catches isn't it what you wanted. It's just really funny because that was his thing.
Yeah.
like what? But then you just think like, okay, at some point his luck on these almost has to revert a little bit and he's going to go on a crazy Larry Fitzgerald run. So I'm waiting for that too.
Given how creative and specific Ben can get with these practice drills, I wonder if they're just going to have him jump and then have some people with like the punji sticks from American Gladiator just beat his ass. Just try like thwack, hold on to the ball.
And then I think there's one last thing to talk about offense, and that was the offensive line had a very good performance. And this is a Cowboys defense that obviously traded away Micah Parsons, hasn't been able to generate much of a pass rush. So, you know, got to take that in consideration. But still, Braxton Jones, today we spell redemption, B-R-A-X-T-O-N. He, after 13 pressures allowed in the first 2 weeks, he was one of just four left tackles in the NFL so far this season to have a game where he allowed zero pressures, not one. So, do I think prime Braxton is back? I don't know, folks. I'm sure the opponent had a lot to do with it, but you just happy for Big Dog. Just really happy that he was able to have a game like that. Hopefully he gets his confidence back. Hopefully he keeps rounded into form, and we have better days coming from Braxton Jones. But otherwise, actually, Dahlman played well. Tooney played well. Jonah Jackson had his second good game in a row. The weak link of the offensive line this week, and it's relative because he wasn't super bad from a pass pro perspective or anything. Darnell, my dude, we got to stop these fucking penalties, man. We got to stop it.
Yep. Yeah, that's all there is to say about Darnell. Like,
it's got
to
stop at some point, right? It's got to stop, right? Right.
You got to think so. The funny thing is, at that press conference for Ben Johnson, they tried to ask him about how well Braxton played. They tried to ask him about Darnell. And all Ben Johnson would say is, wow, we really can't run block for shit. Essentially, like he wasn't taking it. He was just like, you know, what I care about is being able to run the ball.
We need to pound
doing that. So,
No, you know, Ben Johnson's not satisfied at all by any of this, which is great.
He's not blaming Swift, by the way. Like people try to get him to say something bad about DeAndre Swift, and he's like, boy, it would be a lot easier for him to run if we blocked for him.
Yeah, I think Ben seems like one of those guys that kind of understands what each guy needs in terms of motivation. He's obviously been hard on Caleb, but I think, you know, he has familiarity with DeAndre from Detroit, and I had heard that DeAndre really kind of felt doghoused in Detroit sometimes. So I think he takes a little bit more of a softer, more build you up approach with DeAndre. The other thing I like about Ben Johnson, man, is he got real creative with that run game when it was stuck in the mud. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was not previous Bears regimes where they need to, quote, establish the run. And by establish the run, they mean just keep running that same in between the tackles run and letting it die every time. He is like, okay, if we can't run between the tackles, we'll do some reverses and we'll get Oz the ball and we'll use DJ Moore as a running back. Like he'll find a way to get yards on the ground. So I did appreciate the creativity there for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, we should probably talk about this defense a bit because I was expecting him to give up many more points than 14.
Yeah. And I mean, and did they have some turnover luck? Sure. But I would say, you know, who came to play today after we called him out?
Yeah.
Tyreek fucking Stevenson, man.
Holy shit.
Career game, he fucking balled out. And not just because he punched out a fumble, but in coverage, he was lights out on George Pickens after that. You know, after CeeDee Lamb went down, he was lights out on George Pickens, their number one receiver at that point. Just an outstanding game by Tyreek. Came real close to having a pick six at one point. But otherwise, you know, that was a... I hope that is the turning point for this kid because he has all the talent in the world. That's why I've always been higher on him than you. He's got some skills that can't be taught, in my opinion, but he's just never struggled so hard to put it all together. I think he definitely felt the heat and he really responded in a big way. So proud of the kid for sure.
Yeah, gosh, if he's going to be the kind of guy who, you know, gets thrown in the fire, you know, as bad as he was last week, you know, just get roasted by everybody and you're going to come out, you know, playing significantly stronger just to prove the haters wrong. That's a great trait to have, especially if you're Tyrique Stevenson. So yeah, God, just string a couple of these together. We need you, buddy.
Yeah, hopefully we're getting close to Kyler Gordon returning at some point. I know he's week to week, but like if Tyreek can give this kind of effort more often and then we get Kyler Gordon back, then maybe things aren't quite as fucked as they looked last week. And I mean, right now, the Lions are, you know, reports of the Lions' demise were greatly exaggerated because they're still looking pretty darn good against the Ravens right now as we're recording this. They're still marching right down the field. So,
for sure.
Yeah, also on defense, Montez Sweat, I thought, had a real good game. Maybe didn't have a huge impact on the stat sheet, but PFF agreed. I thought he was disrupting on a lot of plays, opened up some blitzes on some other plays. And I thought Jervon stepped up a bit in run defense. And then he went in the second half when the Cowboys had to throw the ball and they knew it, and they were able to just let Jervon pin his ears back and get after it. He was a menace. I think he ended up with, like, he was credited with, like, six pressures or something for the game. So that was... We were swerving, you know, we swerveth not in week two, but we swerve once more.
Yeah, unfortunately, Jervon getting no help next to him on the inside. The revolving door right now of Big Bill not able to play too many snaps. I'm hoping he's working himself back into shape, but Grady Jarrett, not great. The only reason I don't say miserable is Shamar Turner got 23 snaps in this game, and holy shit, there's a reason he's been inactive.
Yeah, I mean, I was not expecting great things from Shamar Turner, that's for sure.
That didn't go well. I will say this, kind of big things from our secondary defensive ends. Dominic Robinson played really
well.
Yeah,
he had a thing. He had his first sack since... Or his second sack, at least, since his first ever career game. So, yeah,
and he played well overall. He was generating, like, some consistent... He was getting wins out there. And when he was on the field, Tano Pasanio was also on the field. And he's been kind of consistently... Yeah.
Well,
we're seeing a lot more... Like, okay, snap count in this game. Dom Rob, in the first two games, 10 and 11 snaps. In this game, 28. Pasanio... had 13 the first game, 23 the second game, 32 this week.
That is a lot of snaps. I would have thought that was more snaps than we'd want, but hey, he played well. So
they played much better than fucking Dio.
I'm very curious about when Austin Booker's coming back as well, too, because I know they put him on short-term IR, and they were hoping to have him back after week four. So hopefully they get, you know, we've only got maybe one more game without Booker. And then he's back after the bye, potentially, which would be nice. And then we'll have to see if he can add something to this rotation as well. So, yeah, I mean, do I think this is a good defense that the things turn around in 1 week? No. But, you know, they sure as shit, like, that was a, in terms of effort and attitude, that was definitely a statement game from them. Like, they
shout out to the line. We got to talk. Tremaine Edmonds, two diving interceptions.
He played well. He was good. And
Noah Sewell, by the way. Had the green dot on the helmet.
I don't know
if you caught that.
I'm loath to give Ryan Poles any credit for anything, and I think it's also pretty noteworthy that, like, we wouldn't have found this out if TJ Edwards, whom he gave a bad extension to, didn't keep getting hurt. But, like, Noah Sewell's looking like a starting linebacker right now, man. Yep. He is.
Hey, unfortunately, even with TJ Edwards out, Hippo... two snaps in this game, and one of those came because Tremaine Edmonds had to take one play off because he looked hurt. So not a great sign when you only have three linebackers and one of them is getting one snap by virtue of your head coach actually wanting to put you in. So that's him, and Shamar Turner are looking like Ryan Poles draft picks, let's say that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, do we have anything left to say other than, you know, fuck you, Matt Eberflus? Like,
fantastic game. You got to hope that we keep it rolling against the team that just got annihilated by Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, this upcoming week. Yeah, I would like to see the Bears obviously keep this train going against Vegas. I mean, we're both big Geno Smith fans. I feel like. I would hate that this would be the week that Ashton Jaunte finally gets. Going And I think Geno obviously is a gamer, so I'm not underestimating the Raiders offensively potentially, but I do think the Bears should be able to score against that defense too. So hopefully we have another week of real good vibes offensively before we get into the bye. But yeah, no, what does it say about Matt Eberflus's defense that, you know, Caleb Williams didn't watch any film this week or go to practice, spent the whole time painting his nails, you know, and was still able to do that against Matt Eberflus. What a, you got sashayed on, motherfucker. So
our glitzy gazelle sashayed.
The glitzy gazelle sashayed. He did. You know, I'm so fucking mad that at that horrible spot on that last completion that he had to Zacchaeus, because that should have been 300 right there for Caleb, and they spotted it terribly. It has stuck him at 298.
You know, so, if Roma just caught that touchdown, we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
That's true. But yeah, so
I wanted to move through the defense swiftly because I know you have some shit to talk, and I want to
hear. Yeah, I think it's time to take a little. Let's take a little look around the NFL. Let's take a little look around the league, because I think first thing I want to talk about: Packers managed to lose to the Browns,
13-10. Browns.
What's going on there, guys? Are you lose to Cleveland? You're just gonna lose to Cleveland like that?
Please. Jordan Love wanting to take the title of worst interception I've ever seen away from Brock Purdy at Iowa State. I don't think he got there. I still think Purdy's interception is the worst I've ever seen.
It's pretty hard to beat interceptions that you throw while already falling to the ground. Generally, yes. Just never going to beat that. Although, I don't know. I mean,
gently tossing the ball right to a Brown who is directly in front of you is pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, like, the real talk, do I think the Packers losing to the Browns means anything horrible for their season? No, they're going to be fine. They're going to make the playoffs. But I do think that there's some January problems there potentially for the Packers, because this wide receiver group is still not great. And just like we called for all the excitement about Matthew Golden in the preseason, everybody was hyping him up and all that. Matthew Golden has, let's see here, so far, trying to find, Bing, you are the worst fucking search engine known to man. Google would never do this to me. They would always have PFR as the
first. I can't believe you're using Bing during the podcast. Like,
I'm sorry.
Insane,
man.
Kyle.
Okay, Matthew. Ah, fuck me, man. Matthew Golden stats. Okay. He is.
He's doing his best, folks.
He's got 6 receptions for 68 yards. So, yeah, I mean, that for all the hype there, that hasn't materialized yet. Their offensive line's suffered some injuries, but has just in general been really, like, struggling more with injuries than with lack of depth than we have seen from Packers' offensive line in recent years. And then Josh Jacobs, I feel like, looks like he's maybe lost a step this year. He is currently averaging, let's see here, just 3.1 yards per carry through 3 games. He has not yet rushed for more than 84 yards in a single game. I think there are some red flags potentially in that loss, not for the rest of the regular season. The Packers will be fine, but for January against, you know, potentially playoff defenses, you know, if they face Philadelphia, is Vic Fangio going to be able to clamp down on that secondary and stuff Jacobs and potentially get Jordan Love to make some poor decisions? I think that's a possibility if you watch that game. So,
yeah, and I mean, like you said, it looks like the Lions' demise was greatly exaggerated by me, and they seem to be
fine.
You were so quick,
and I was like, I don't know that I want to extrapolate.
Hopeful.
That's what I love about you. You are always
I got hope.
You're always willing to commit. You're always just like, God, I have seen it. I know the truth.
But I also said in our preview about the Packers, the Michael Parsons deal reinforces a position of strength, yes, and I do like that. I like that strategy. But they didn't fix any of the problems they had last year this offseason. In fact, several of their problem positions just looked worse. Like you said, their wide receiver core, their offensive line got worse. Jordan Love is still Jordan Love. So, yeah, Michael Parsons helps, yes. You're going to have a very good team, but the holes are still the holes, man. Like, and now your questions shift, and that's a good thing, from can we get into the playoffs with this team to can we contend for a title with this team? But those questions are still the same. Can Jordan Love win a Super Bowl? Do we have the talent on this team to win a Super Bowl? And it really doesn't look like it. Like, the Browns are going to shut you down that bad. you're going to run in two similar defenses. And I, can Jordan Love put it together? Can he go on a heater for, you know, three games, maybe four games if they fall far enough? Yes, absolutely. But is it just as likely that he costs you one of those three or four games on your way to that Super Bowl title? Hell yeah. We've seen that plenty of times before. So it's nice to see the Packers fail a week where the Bears dominate. Just overall, like,
yeah, we don't get
it doesn't
that
mean
lot,
anything but for the rest of the year. Who fucking cares? The Bears dominated, and the Packers looked just fucking miserable against one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah. Well, and again, also very funny because it shows that, like, if the Browns had not horribly fucked themselves in so many ways with the quarterback situation, they'd be a playoff contender right now. They would. Yeah. But they did.
Baker Mayfield on the Browns.
Yeah, imagine a quarterback like Baker Mayfield on the Browns. What could they be doing with a guy like Baker?
Baker Mayfield and what, three extra first-round picks?
Right. Yeah, and like $230 million of cash that could have been allocated elsewhere, presumably. So, yeah. Okay, so, Travis, did you watch the Giants versus the Chiefs? Did you watch it?
I watched the first half of that miserable fucking
football
game.
So then you missed the second half, the really funny part, where Brian Daboll, who already entered this season with 2021 Matt Nagy energy.
Yeah, it happened.
He did the Dalton Fields where he brought in Jackson Dart for a red zone package that included, you know, some RPOs and stuff. Didn't let him throw the ball, just, you know, tried to use the threat of him as a plus one on the run game. And so every single play, when Jackson Dart trotted in, the crowd would cheer. When Russell Wilson trotted back in, the crowd would boo. And then after doing all that stuff with Jackson Dart to set things up, on third and six, he then uses the Jackson Dart run play with Russell Wilson, who doesn't gain a yard because he's old. And then now, of course, we have Brian Daboll not committing to Russell Wilson going forward as the starter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it'll be Jackson Dart this week, just because I don't think they want to throw the kid into the fire against the Chargers defense. But it sure sounds like, as these things tend to happen, we're seeing it just as it happened with Mitch Trubisky, just as it happened with Justin Fields. By week four, the kid that you weren't gonna play until he was ready is gonna play. Sure seems like that's what's coming. And it's God, we've seen this movie before, because I mean, I know Jackson Dart had a very impressive preseason to some people. I broke down, I think, on this podcast why I wasn't quite as impressed. But this is a kid who had like four plays in college. This is a Giants offensive line that's still not very good. He's gonna look like a rookie quarterback who had four plays in college behind a bad offensive line. That's what's gonna happen. They're not gonna win a lot of games. Daboll probably getting fired, and then here you are, you're hiring a new GM and a new coach that have no ties to your second year quarterback.
Yeah, boy, that has become a nice layup victory, we're hoping, in the middle of the season for the Bears. But here's the deal. Here's who the Giants have next 6 weeks for potentially Jackson Dart hopping in. Chargers, Saints, so there's a nice one. And then Eagles, Broncos, Eagles, 49ers.
Jesus Christ.
Okay. So I'm just saying, guys, Russell Wilson just played the Chiefs, who have a fantastic defense. I feel like maybe people don't understand that still. They still think that's like a greatest show on turf thing happening. It hasn't been carried by their defense for the last few years. Like, what do you expect Russell Wilson to do? And really, what do you expect anybody to do against this murderer's row you've got coming up? So, God, good luck, Jackson Dart. But yeah, for all the world, it seems like you're right, Kyle. They're going to throw him out too early, and they're going to ruin him, like we've seen too many times. Kyle, you've really held back. You've been super patient. You have had some Falcons fans coming after you.
So,
not even for being mean.
Something super innocuous. And so it's time for me to be a petty son of a bitch. Because you know what? That's what I do. And I haven't been on Twitter as much as I used to be. I pop in and out these days. I make a little jokey joke, you know? And that's all I tried to do. I tried to make a little jokey joke. And, you know, Mina Kimes. We love Mina Kimes. She had Greg Rosenthal on her little podcast, and she was they were talking about Michael Penix. And Rosenthal was like, a lot of people around the league have been impressed by how Michael Penix looks like a veteran from the neck up. And I quoted it, and I just made a little jokey joke, and I was like, well, he's 25 years old. Or I said, well, he's the same age as Trevor Lawrence, which he is. Fucking Google. And he played 6 years or 5 years in college, which he did. Fucking Google. So one would hope. That was all I was saying. Like, yeah, I would hope that Michael Penix processes like a veteran because in terms of his biological age, his college experience, and, you know, the state of his knees, which are basically Mark Schlereth's, yeah, he's a veteran already. So you would hope from a mental standpoint that he isn't. Oh, my God, the Falcons fans, they got so mad at me. I got like, bro, why are you trying to dumb down what they're saying? Other older quarterback, the age doesn't matter. He's only 2 years older than Caleb, which is hilarious. Only 2 years older than Caleb. I mean, come on. He's only 2 years older. Like, it's not like 2 years is a fucking lifetime for some people in the NFL. Like, people forever ignore how prospect age matters. But yeah, I was just like, yeah, all right. And I got several people like, you're just coping. I had one person, he's just coping with having Caleb, little bro. He's coping with having Caleb. He's so much better than Caleb. And I was like, all right. Guys are asking for it. And boy, what happened yesterday? Did Caleb Williams throw as many touchdowns versus the Dallas Cowboys yesterday as Michael Penix has thrown so far in his entire NFL career? I think he did.
That did happen.
And then did Michael Penix get fucking blanked by the goddamn Carolina Panthers?
The Panthers.
Blanked. 0 points. A goose egg. Against the Carolina Panthers. And that's really interesting because the only reason that anybody's been fucking hyping up Michael Penix in the first place is because he had a sample size of 3 games last year. One of which was against the last one, the one that let everybody that he rode off into the offseason with and got all this unwarranted hype. To the point that fucking Ty Dunn in his goddamn article was like, the Bears, Ryan Pohl should be fired because he didn't even look at Michael Penix. And people around the league love Michael Penix. The one good game he had was against the fucking Carolina Panthers last week in Week 18. Can you imagine if Caleb Williams' rookie season, if all we had to evaluate was 3 games, one of which was the game he had against the fucking Panthers? Do you know what the hype would be if that was the case? So, no, here's where I'm going to go in on Michael Penix, because everything I fucking said about him pre-draft, and you can go back, folks, you can find our Michael Penix. We didn't do a whole Michael Penix episode, but it's in there with J.J. McCarthy, I'm pretty sure. Yep. But what did I talk about with Michael Penix? I said he can't fucking move. He can't fucking move, and he cannot play. And then people are like, well, he ran a 4-5. Doesn't matter. It's not about how what straight line speed. And he's had a couple scrambles this year. He had a really impressive 3rd-and-8 scramble in this game against the Panthers where he gained 3 fucking yards straight through a gap in the middle of the offensive line. It's a play where Caleb Williams at least picks up 12. Pretty damn sure. Michael Penix got 3. But he can't move side to side. The play is dead immediately once he gets off his launch point. And I also said that people praise him for his sack avoidance because he had a low pressure to sack rate in college. He has a low pressure to sack rate in the NFL. But that's because you don't get sacked very often if you just immediately give up on the play and check it down, which is what he's doing. His ADOT is fucking pathetic. And I actually brought up a statistic. You know, I was looking at cable, and I brought it up earlier in this episode, about how his QB assigned pressure percentage is so much lower this year. Only 11% of his pressures can be attributed to Caleb. That's great. We love that. It's good progress. You know what that number is for Michael Penix, Travis? You know what percentage of Michael Penix's pressures he's been responsible for this year?
I do not know.
0%. Oh. He hasn't been and you think, wow, that's really good, man.
That's
he
doesn't incredible. Create his own
pressure. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. A great quarterback, one that's trying to make plays for his team, one that's hanging in the pocket as it collapses to throw the ball downfield, he'll create some of his own pressure. Because here's the guys who... Here's the list of quarterbacks that were the lowest in terms of QB created pressure last year at the end of the season. It was Derek Carr, who you might remember just retired. It was Joe Flacco, who is 39. It was Kirk Cousins, who got benched for being immobile for Michael Penix. It was Mac Jones, a famously immobile backup. Those were the guys that were the lowest in this stat last year, because those are old guys who cannot move, and when the pocket collapses, they check it down and they throw it away. That's what they do. They give up on plays. They're not pushing the ball downfield. They can't anymore. That's where Michael Penix is. From the neck up, sure, He's a veteran, Greg Rosenthal, but that's also because from the waist down, he is fucking 35-year-old Kirk Cousins. That's what you've got in your fucking second-year quarterback, a guy who is so afraid of getting hit because of his injury history that he there was a on the Falcons' second drive. It was 3rd and 8. Falcons' second drive in that game. Penix takes the snap. Nothing's there on his first read, but I watched it. I watched it in the All-22. The pocket is not collapsing. He could have time to reset his feet. He could if he was Caleb, but he could if he was any relatively actually athletic quarterback. He could break the pocket, try to create it on the edge. He doesn't. He immediately goes boom, boom, boom. Nothing there. It's 3rd and 8. He checks it down to an already covered Bijan Robinson in the flat. Bijan gets tackled for a 4-yard loss. But he didn't take a sack, Travis. That doesn't go in his pressure to sack rate. It doesn't go as a negative EPA sack for Penix, so the EPA nerds will be on my dick about it because he, you know, he's EPA, he's not so bad, you know, because sure. He doesn't create negative plays. But that's Michael Penix, okay? He has attempted, Travis, how many passes do you think Michael Penix has attempted deep between the hash marks this year?
Oh, between the hash marks, not
between the hash marks, not his sideline balls, because we talked about how he loves to throw those sideline balls at Washington, but that's the only kind of deep pass he throws. How many deep passes has Penix thrown between the hash marks this year?
Kyle, if I watched Michael Penix for a day in college, I watched him for a lifetime. He threw 0 passes middle.
He's thrown 0 deep passes between the hash marks this year. He's thrown 2 in his entire NFL career so far. He's attempted 2 passes between the deep hash marks. He has attempted, I believe, just 8 intermediate deep throws. Like, only 8% of his total passes this year have come between the hash marks greater than 10-plus yards. Just 8%. That number for Caleb, who is still learning how to be comfortable throwing middle of the field, is 15% right now. And even last year in his rookie year, when he was a little hesitant to throw middle of the field, it was still 12%. Penix is at 8% of his passes 10 yards past the line of scrimmage in between the hashes. He won't throw middle of the field. And when defensive coordinators figure that out and they figure out that you just want to throw those sideline balls, they'll shade the safeties. And so now his beloved 9 ball, his beloved go ball is not there. He can't throw a 50-50 ball to Drake London because he's bracketed by the safeties on every play because they know the kid's fucking scared to throw over the middle of the field. So what does he do? He checks it down. He checks it down. And that's, you have a guy right now who has, that's the Justin Fields problem, you know, is that they will just shade the safeties over to take away the deep ball down the sideline if they figure out that that's all you throw. But Justin Fields solves that problem for himself sometimes. Jaden Daniels solves this problem for himself sometimes. Jalen Hurts solves this problem for himself sometimes because, okay, fine, you want to play 2 high safeties, you want to take away my 9 ball, you want to exploit the fact that I don't like throwing middle of the field because there be dragons there, that's fine. I'm just going to run. I'm going to run and get 20 yards, and I'm going to do that until you get so fucking mad you start bringing a safety down, and then my 9 ball's back. That's what those guys do.
Yep.
Michael Penix right now is, what if you had Justin Fields and he was 0 threat to run the ball? And you know what that looks like, Travis? What does it look like when you have Justin Fields with 0 threat to run the ball? Does it look like scoring 0 points against the fucking Panthers?
0 points. Against shut the out
fucking Carolina Panthers. And I had these motherfuckers in my mention all weekend calling him better than Caleb, saying I was coping about Caleb Williams. You're coping about this motherfucker, a guy who literally has been less mobile and less successful in that same fucking offense than 35-year-old Kirk Cousins coming off a torn Achilles tendon.
Yeah, you sat a 25-year-old rookie for a full season and like in some kind of misguided hope that he would develop further. He's 26 now.
Yeah.
And you're playing him. This guy, I mean, it's just this whole group of guys, right? With Penix, Daniels, and Nix. Like, we could talk about Bo Nix because that's another fun one. Where it's like these guys all expected him because they were rookies. They would follow the normal rookie curve. But this is a whole new group of people who we had never seen before, and we will probably never see again, of guys who played 5 full seasons as starters at Division I schools. Like, yes, Falcons fans, I understand that college and the NFL are two different things. But normally, a guy like Caleb Williams, a guy like Drake May, the reason they don't have as much experience is because they get through 2 years as a starter in college, and they only get through 2 years because they couldn't jump after 1 year, because they just didn't have the opportunity, right? Yeah. Like, these guys hit that point, and Bo Nix was being driven out of fucking Auburn when he was first draft eligible because those people didn't want to see his goddamn face again because he was so shit. Michael Penix Jr. was shit enough to get out of Indiana. He's at Indiana, and they're like, we don't really fucking care for this guy. He goes and gets reborn at Washington because he's older than everyone, because he started more games than everyone. Jaden Daniels is the same way. Ask people in Arizona State who went to Arizona State how they feel about Jaden Daniels. Like, he was garbage. He was awful at Arizona State. He goes to LSU, and again, you have experience. You've started more games than these guys. You have a bunch of athletic talent, and all of a sudden, I'm fucking 24 and 25, and I'm dominating children, right, who are 19. It's insane. We've got a guy out there right now in Ethan Kaliak-Manis playing at Rutgers, and he is in his fourth year as a full-time starter. He has passed for barely 6.5 yards per attempt the first 3 years of his career. This year, he's over 9 yards per attempt. You know why? He's fucking older than everybody is all it is. Everybody was tricked. They were pulled in by these guys. And now you see Caleb Williams, Drake May coming into their own like a normal rookie would, like a normal ultra-talented, top-level prospect
would. It's early. There's no guarantee it's going to hold. But right now, in terms of EPA per play, in terms of PFF grade, the two highest-graded 2024 quarter, actually, hell, the two highest graded 2024, 2025, and 2023 quarterbacks. If you add them all together, you throw in CJ Stroud and Bryce Young while you're at it. The two highest graded ones right now are Drake May and Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
The guys who were normal age for top prospects last year, the guys who ate their lumps rookie years like guys used to do, and now they're showing massive strides in year two. And the ups, and everyone's looking at them, and nobody thinks they're finished products yet, is the thing. Nobody thinks that Caleb Williams right now is as good as he's ever going to be. Nobody thinks that Drake May is a finished product. But they have so much more room to grow. They have so much more arm talent, so much more ability than those guys. People are looking at Bo Nix right now. This is a guy who was supposed to be
5.6 yards per attempt on.
He was supposed to be, he's the lowest graded quarterback in the NFL right now per PFF. He was supposed to be polished. He was supposed to be this quick guy. And Sean Payton, we're watching right now Bo Nix. He is 2019 Mitch Trubisky. Last year was the Nagy Mitch first year, where Nagy pulls out RPOs. He pulls out every bullshit stop in the books just to try to make the guy look functional for a year. And here we are in year two. Defenses have all of that. So now it's time for you to just step up and play quarterback, and he can't do it. He had three different pass plays against the Chargers where he had a wide open receiver running deep. And on all three of them, because this is what Bo Nix does, he's fucking just drifting in the pocket. He's drifting forward. He's running to contact. He's not setting his feet. Overthrows all of them. There was no reason for any of it, but he's nervous. He gets happy feet. Some Denver fans are coping hard and they're going with full Sean Payton, but the smart ones that I know are like, he's 26, guys. This is probably who he is. You should be concerned that this is how bad he looks again. You should be concerned that September Bo Nix in 2025 looks exactly like September Bo Nix in 2024. Like, if you're coping with, well, he looked like this last September 82 and he went better as the year went along. Yeah, he should be through that already. If last September was his growing pains, he should be through that already. Caleb Williams looks a lot better in September 2025 than he looked in September 2024. Like, it matters that you draft guys with room to grow, and or if you don't. So yeah, I mean that's right. I didn't want to go scorched earth on Michael Penix. I think he's kind of entertaining when everything's working for him. Yeah. We talked about how he's a dying breed of quarterback, but like, fine, you guys wanted to do it. You got mad because I pointed out two 100% true facts. He's old and he played a lot of college ball. Well, he's old, he played a lot of college ball, and right now he fucking sucks in the NFL. Suck my dick, Falcons fans.
Hell yeah. We didn't have time to talk about it this week. I'm going to have a whole thing about it here eventually, but I should probably just make note that Daniel Jones is on fucking fire, and he is burning the NFL down around him. I have never seen the Alex Smith Event Horizon do this to a person in quite this way, and I'm terrified. Also, probably worth mentioning, in the Alex Smith Event Horizon hemisphere is that Sam Darnold is also still playing great. So that does not appear to just be a Kevin O'Connell thing. And I'm scared. Well, I'm fucking terrified, Kyle.
I will say, I think if you watch how the Seahawks are doing that, he's being very, he's still being very heavily managed like Kevin O'Connell was doing it.
Let me tell you, dude, if you can manage a quarterback to do that, I will pay you to coach a team, which is why we're paying Ben Johnson, I guess.
Well, for instance, Sam Darnold right now is 27th in total pass attempts right now.
I mean, it helps that the game in Seattle was over before the first quarter was over this week.
Yeah.
And they literally ran out the game with Kenneth.
Yeah, Walker. Well, I'm not knocking Sam Darnold. Maybe it sounds like it. I'm just saying that the nice thing about the Seahawks is that Kubiak is from that same tree. I mean, he worked with he was O'Connell's offensive coordinator 1 year, I think, wasn't he? In Minnesota. They've worked together. Kubiak definitely took notes on everything O'Connell did, and he's not asking Darnold to not be Minnesota Darnold.
Yeah.
So he's definitely like, look, we understand that you know, there's some gremlin rules here. We got to run play action. We got to give you a lot of 1-2 yes, no plays. We got to give you some high, low concepts where you only got to read one side of the field. We can't feed you after midnight. But if I do, I'm going to do those things. And with the Seahawks defense, they're looking pretty promising. So
Seattle's got to be feeling pretty good given the state of the rest of that division.
Yeah, I mean, the 49ers just lost Bosa. The Rams, I don't think the Rams are going anywhere. But the Cardinals, I wanted to believe, and I've been – it's a bad year for my Kyler Murray and my Trevor Lawrence agendas so far this year because I believe in both of those guys, but both of them should be doing better than they're doing right now. They've got decent play calling. They've got a decent supporting cast. Like it's kind of hard to watch a Cardinals game or a Jaguars game right now and be like, yeah, those guys are definitely not underachieving right now. They definitely are. So if Kyler rounds into form and starts to look more like he did last year, I still like the Cardinals in that division, but oh, and speaking of the Cardinals, you know, I got a little annoyed all off season long because people were like, I can't believe people let the Cardinals have Will Johnson in round two. He looks so good in camp. He looks so good early in the game. But yeah, it's
the injuries.
Yeah, he's injured. He's injured already. Like we did this with Christian Gonzalez too. He had an all pro season. It was like, I can't believe Christian Gonzalez fell that far under. Yeah, he had an all pro season and here it is. It's week four and the Patriots still probably aren't going to have him this week. Again, for the second season or the second out of three seasons he's been in the NFL, he's been injured for a quarter to half the season. Like, injury history matters, and fans kind of treat it like that's like, honestly, like Jaden Daniels being injured right now. If he has a bad year this year, it's already lined up. You know, people be like, well, he got hurt early in the season and he was never himself, blah, blah, blah. That's going to be the excuse for his regression, ignoring the fact that Jaden Daniels is built like that and runs the ball as often as 1999 Eddie George. Like, this was always going to
be awful, horrific.
And he led all QBs in QB hits last year. He leads all QBs in QB hits this year. Wow, imagine that. He's hurt. Like, it's almost like that was part of my goddamn eval.
It's almost like we spent a long time when we evaluated him on an entire episode of this podcast saying, that guy's going to get hurt.
Yeah. I've said it on this podcast. I'll keep saying it. Like, people need to go back and listen to what I said about Jaden Daniels and what my concerns were and how those specific things have translated to the NFL. I never said this guy can never be even an average NFL passer. He's going to suck. He's going to be horrible. He's going to be terrible. I said he kind of looks like Marcus Mariota if he was faster but skinnier. I'm worried about how many hits he's going to take. I think the deep ball stuff is overrated. I think this, I think that. I'm just worried what his ceiling ultimately is over the length of an NFL season. And if I was picking number two, I wouldn't take him over Drake May. That's what I said. People heard, Jaden Daniels bad and have been dunking on me ever since. But like, he's hurt again. He's hurt again because he takes these hits. And that was part of the eval too.
This will not be the last time. It's just going to keep happening this way.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's your check-in on all the young quarterbacks around the league.
Yeah. Except for Drake May, who I, you know, he had some bozo plays. Tough luck, red zone interception that really wasn't his fault. But I, you know, Drake's doing good too. Love Drake.
Absolutely. All right. Well, hopefully we're back here talk about another Bears win, or at least talking about another really fun game against Las Vegas this weekend. And then we get a bye. Maybe we'll get some people healthy. And then we've got a game against Jaden Daniels, if he's healthy, in a couple weeks. So, yeah, a lot to look forward to as a Bears fan. I'm pretty chipper this week. Wasn't last week. So thank God for that.
Yeah, still worried about this defense. I won't lie to you. I'm still worried about him.
Hell yeah. That's right. But, you know, Tyreek Stevenson forever. Right?
Tyreek? Yeah.
Absolutely. We've always said Tyreek Stevenson.
You especially have always been a Tyreek Stevenson.
I have always been a proponent of Tyreek Stevenson. No, it seems to be if I shit on him, he plays well. Tyreek, you are fucking garbage. All right. Yeah. Listen to this podcast. You are the worst. Go out there and just shit the bed everywhere against who? Jacoby Myers? Is that their top wide receiver? Las Vegas? Or is it still Hunter Renfro?
Yeah, no, Hunter Renfro's he's a Panther, so.
Fantastic. Jacoby Myers. All right, go shit the bed against him, Tyreek. Oh, hold up. Kyle, what should we do this week for a Discord invite? Last week, guys, we got some fantastic responses about Byzantine emperors.
We did, yeah. So if you guys want to join the Discord, email Travis. Is it start Kyle Orton at Gmail, or just start Kyle at Gmail?
Start Kyle Orton at gmail.com.
Email Travis, and I want you to say with complete honesty, because if you say something like a bear, I'm going to demand you like post your stats in the chat. I want you to tell Travis with confidence what you think the largest land animal that you could beat in a fight unarmed is.
Fantastic. Like, this is exactly what I want.
With 100% certainty. Not a doubt in your mind. So like you might be like, you know what? With 100% certainty, it might not be bigger than a cat. And that's okay. Like you're going to learn something about yourself when you admit that. I think. So, but if, like I said, if you're going to know, like, I can fucking take down a wolf with 100% certainty, then you're going to need to post stats. You need to post some selfies, brother. You need to post the workout routine. So, you know, don't come at us with that. But, you know, if you're like, I don't know, I think I could fuck up a gopher. Hell yeah. All right. So.
Absolutely. All right. Yep. StarKyler@gmail.com. Largest land animal that you could beat one-on-one. Kyler, are we going armed or unarmed?
Unarmed, 100% confidence. I mean, like, beyond a shadow of a doubt, you believe you could take this creature down.
Yeah, you definitely want to be in the Discord. We are having a blast on game days, win or lose.
The game day threads are popping. So.
All right, well, I'll see you next week, bud.
I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.